We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
You folks are going to be so mad at me by the end of tonight's show. I just know that everybody's going to be furious with me because everybody hates it when you shatter somebody's idols. And tonight we're going to shatter some idols. We're going to talk about Yankee Doodle and what it's doing to you, how it's ruined the Tea Party, what you can do about it if you really want to see the Tea Party and conservative movement grow and get back on its feet, because the establishment and the Yankee Doodlers and some of your idols have been hoodwinking you for quite a while, and it has absolutely affected why we are in the situation that we're in now. It's time to wake up, folks. It's time to let go of preconceived notions. You got to stop idolizing the rock star politicians that we've put into place and start thinking about it in a new way. We've got some great things coming up. Actually, Cindy McGee is back with me tonight. I'm so happy to have her back. She's been very busy working on the homestead in the middle of Missouri somewhere, building the bunker and getting everything ready for the great collapse. But thanks for being back with me tonight, Cindy.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's good to be back, actually. I've missed being on. So.
We're just going to spend a short time tonight together, giving everybody and a couple of great examples. We're going to talk about Missouri examples, but just because we're talking about specific things specific to Missouri doesn't mean that it's not affecting you. These are great examples of what's going on all across the country in state legislatures and in Washington, D.C., how you're being Yankee Doodled and you don't even know it half the time. There are a couple of bills that we're going to discuss tonight that are perfect examples of how your liberties are being taken away from you, and it's just like taking candy from a baby. Most of us don't even know what's going on. Isn't that right, Cindy?
Yeah, it is right, unfortunately. And sometimes, you know, they just know how to tickle our ears with just the right sounding thing. And what seems to be a good thing, if we're not asking the right questions and we're not thinking it through and taking it to the wall, and I think the legislators make this mistake too, Lisa. I think that it sounds good to them. They're trying to put a Band-Aid on or fix it or write it or whatever, but they don't take it to the wall. They don't
research
what are the
it.
Unintended consequences of this.
Yep.
If we pass it like this in this form, what are the unintended consequences?
You know, and I know everybody wants to give their legislator the benefit of the doubt. And maybe, you know, maybe that's reasonable, but here's the deal. You have to stop doing that, at least to the degree that you're doing it now. You have everybody has to be accountable, because here's why. And it'll become increasingly clear as the discussion goes on tonight. You send your legislator to your state capitol or to Washington, D.C., to do this job. And this job requires thorough vetting, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, looking at every possible scenario from a proactive stance, not a reactive stance, to make sure that the noose is not quietly slipped around your neck every time they pass a piece of legislation. And, I mean, we're going to talk about Common Core tonight here in Missouri, and we're going to talk about a farm initiative that's going to go on the ballot, I think, in August.
Yes.
In August, here.
I know.
Here in
I know the Yeah, the Farm Bill will be on there in August, I know.
Yeah, and these... And
the right to farm.
Yeah, it's the right to farm, and you know more about it than I do, Cindy, so I'm going to step aside and let you talk about this, but this simple little right to farm bill that sounds perfectly innocuous is going to affect whether or not you can grow tomatoes in your backyard. And you don't even know it. I read the ballot language, and I mean, there's, you know, to the layperson, you wouldn't even think to ask some of the questions that you're thinking. And the people that are putting these bills forward are some of your favorite Tea Party sweethearts. You know, they are. And I can tell you, at least in the case of this Common Core bill, folks, you know, they're bragging about this bill. And you have totally lost all your educational freedom. You have got concrete, etched in stone, Common Core here in Missouri, and there is not a damn thing that you can do about it. It's already a done deal. They are not going to change it. But let's just give these examples. Let's talk about this right to farm bill. Let's see. I have the Attorney General's website up, and I can read.
Yeah,
oops. Oh, before we do that, though, let's give a Justina update, a Justina Pelletier update.
Yes.
Because that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Cindy. You know more.
Want me to give the update?
Yeah,
well,
give the update.
Well, Justina is back in her state of Connecticut, and the state has filed to have her return to her parents. They've met all of the guidelines that DFS set out for a reunification plan. And so that's a good thing. I think the thing that saddens me is that the parents were forced into complying with the state to get their daughter back when she never should have been removed in the first place. But I guess that's a battle for another day, because getting her out of the clutches of DFS and return to her family and receiving proper medical care is the first priority.
Yeah, because they're going to kill her.
Absolutely. And there was a video that was released this week that actually showed her begging Governor Patrick of Massachusetts and DFS of Massachusetts to let her go back to her family and her friends, that that's where she belongs. And she just kept saying, you can do it, and that's where I need to be. And it was absolutely heartbreaking to hear this child begging them to send her back home to her family and friends. I cannot imagine the damage, the emotional damage, not to mention physical, that they've done to her over the past year and a half, Lisa. It is
She'll never be the same emotionally.
Done.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what the physical
damages
are, but she'll never be the same emotionally. She spent 2 years out of her young life. What is she, 14?
Yeah, 16, when they took her.
14?
She was 14. She turned 14 or 15. She turned 16 while she was in it. She just celebrated her 16th birthday.
Oh,
I'm sorry, I'm losing track. I've got 23 grandchildren, and I couldn't give you their ages right now. So.
But 2 years out of your life,
on that.
when you're that age, 2 years out of your life is a very long time, and she will never be the same, and she's lost schooling. She's lost everything. That's just horrible.
Yeah, because they didn't even make sure that she was, and that was just another one of the problems. They were not making sure that she was following along with the outline that the school had given for her to be able to stay up with her studies. So it's, and 2 years is a very long time at that age. And it really is a long time. So much happens and so much changes in those years of your life, Lisa, when you really think about it.
Oh, absolutely.
And those are such formative years and such important years, and to be taken away from your family the way she was. And anyway, it's been an atrocity. But the good news is that it looks like really positive steps are being taken now to make sure that she's reunited with her family. And we're hoping that that happens no later than by the end of this month.
We know what the compliance issues were with the parents, what hoops they had to jump through?
You know, I haven't had an opportunity to look at those, to be very honest with you, so I don't know what the four-step plan was for reunification, but I know that the state of Massachusetts said that it's been done, and I believe it was them that had to file the papers to reunify her, even though she's back in Connecticut, which is really bizarre, too, because Connecticut is her home state and Massachusetts is the one that removed her from her family when she was taken to a hospital there.
All kinds of things wrong with that picture.
Yeah, everything that could possibly be wrong was wrong. Every possible parental and human right was violated, in my opinion. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Anyway, that's,
okay,
the latest.
Let's talk about this right to farm bill that's coming up in Missouri. I'll read the ballot language, and then we can talk about why it's really, really bad, and it'll pass because people won't understand. Okay, so the official ballot title, shall the Missouri Constitution be amended to ensure that the right of Missouri citizens to engage in agriculture production and ranching practices shall not be infringed? The potential costs or savings to government entities are unknown, but likely limited unless the resolution leads to increased litigation costs and or the loss of federal funding. And then the fair ballot language says, a yes vote will amend the Missouri Constitution to guarantee the rights of Missourians to engage in farming and ranching practices subject to any power given to local government under Article 6 of the Missouri Constitution. A no vote will not amend the Missouri Constitution regarding farming and ranching. If passed, the measure will have no impact on taxes. Okay, it does sound innocuous.
It does.
You know?
But the devil's in the details. And let me read the actual ballot language, and it's very short. And it's this. That agriculture, which it will be known as Section 35 to Article 1 of the Constitution of Missouri, that agriculture, which provides food, energy, health benefits, and security, is the foundation and stabilizing force of Missouri's economy. To protect this vital sector of Missouri's economy, the right of farmers and ranchers to engage in farming and ranching practices shall be forever guaranteed in this state, subject to duly authorized powers, if any, conferred by Article 6 of the Constitution of Missouri. And so the devil's in the details, Lisa, or sometimes the devil is in the lack of detail. And I think in this particular instance, number one, there has been no law prohibiting farming or animal agriculture in the state of Missouri or in our nation. Now, yes, I understand and you understand that there are federal overreaches into those areas that are mind-bending and wrong and shouldn't be happening. But do we really need to amend the Missouri State Constitution to fix something that we have a right to do
already
under the U.S. Constitution and the Missouri Constitution already? And so when you start to really break this down and look at it, and better minds than mine have looked at this and asked some questions that deserve to be asked, and it is, okay, who is going to define what and who farming and farmers are, ranchers are? What's the definition? Who falls in that category? Because
right.
We see people in this country under attack, backyard, people raising backyard chickens, growing home gardens. There are attacks happening everywhere. And big ag isn't coming under nearly as much attack because they have their big lobby groups to protect them. And it's the small farmer, it's the little guys that are being hurt in agriculture by a lot of these federal regulations and stuff. And big ag and is benefiting from them in the long run because it's driving the small farmer out of business because they cannot comply with these rules and regulations. And
so what this is really aimed at, it's aimed at squeezing out the small farmer.
Right,
farmer.
And what's going to happen is there will be challenges because there are people who want to be able to control everything. Let's face it. I mean, we're conservatives. We understand. We know. We're looking at what the government is doing to us. We are awake and aware that they're imposing regulations that are absolutely ridiculous, and they have no right to impose them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are driving people out of agriculture and out of animal agriculture, which we desperately need. And when you go to your grocery store and you see prices going up, there are a lot of reasons for that, but one of them is the outrageous imposition of regulation on the agriculture industry. And And the thing is that but when you look at a bill like this, it is suddenly going to give us the right to farm and ranch, but it doesn't define anything about it. You're going to have challenges, and you're going to have big ag challenging some things too, and you're going to have these special interest groups coming in and challenging people who are doing this, and then somebody's going to have to make the decision, and somebody's going to have to set the definition of what a farmer is, what is a farm, what is animal agriculture, what qualifies under that. And so you're opening a Pandora's box, because this is going to end up being, these questions will end up being decided in the courts.
Okay, and so in other words, we've enacted, we're putting something on the ballot that's going to change the Missouri Constitution,
mm-hmm.
when we didn't have a problem in the first place, right? And
mm-hmm.
and what it's going to do is it's going to require a definition of who is a farmer, who is not a farmer, who is a rancher, who is not a rancher. There's nothing in the statutes to define that as of right now. And they're going to be fueling the court system, God help us all, which is in sad enough shape as it is, because we know the legislature is not doing their job of overseeing the court systems and the judiciary. So we're just going to be squeezing small farmers, maybe backyard farmers, out of the ability to do their, you know, to enjoy growing vegetables in their own areas, because it will become illegal, because we won't be able to afford to go to court when big ag and special interests challenges my tomato garden in the backyard.
Right.
Is that really what, I mean, and this is not tinfoil hat stuff, folks. I mean, if you,
no.
you know, there are stories all the time about a neighborhood, you know, people in neighborhoods being fined because they have tomato plants growing in their backyard gardens. And, you know, I mean, we just witnessed the thing out with the Bundy Ranch and the cattle issues. And we've had Mark Baker of Baker's Green Acres. They went after his so-called, the attorney general of that state named his pigs feral pigs. They drew up all kinds of bogus definitions of what pigs were, and if it was a pig, it was feral under their regulations,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to run that farm out of business. And they spent
yeah.
hundreds of thousands of dollars fighting that.
Correct.
I mean, this is going
and
on
like,
all
you just, right, and you just hit another nail on the head. In this bill, in this amendment to the Missouri Constitution, and I'm not a constitutional expert, I'm going to say that up front. I'm just trying to put my common sense hat on and to ask the questions that need to be asked, to take this to the wall and to look and see what could the unintended consequences of this be if it's passed. And I think that the unintended consequences could be quite severe. First of all, Article 6 of the Constitution of Missouri has to do with local government and all of the different county seats, annexation, municipalities, city and county offices. I mean, it has to do with all local government all across the state of Missouri and how those different entities interact with each other, et cetera, et cetera. And you just said something key. You know, we've got counties and cities that want to regulate and tell people that they can't have a tomato patch in their backyard. And we've seen that happen in Missouri, as a matter of fact. We've seen
yeah.
people being forced to take their gardens out because people were complaining because of local ordinances. And so the first thing that happens in this bill is they still, instead of giving people the right to farm and ranch, they're still giving the local government, all the local governments, the right to go ahead and, you know, regulate people away from being able to do the farming and the ranching. And so this is where you're going to have challenges, and people are going to end up in court, and the courts are going to end up defining or the legislature is going to be forced to go in and try to start defining who and where farming practices can be done. And, you know, it's just opening a whole can of worms.
Yeah,
and
all
in the
of
end,
you didn't have a problem in the first place.
Exactly.
Right?
And if people wanted to challenge their local county ordinances and stuff, then they could go to those entities and elect new people to change stupid rules. And
Yeah, it's a lot easier to do it on that level than it is on the state level.
Absolutely. And I'm really concerned that they're opening us up to not only having it all defined in the courts and or another session in the legislature to try and clarify, which we know all that happens, every time the legislature passes a bill, we end up mired in more stuff and it gets muddier and muddier, not clearer and clearer.
Right.
But the other thing is that I think that the real concern that I've seen expressed by others more knowledgeable about how this language can affect things is that it is opening the door for big agriculture. Oh, let's see. What comes to mind in Missouri when you think big ag? Monsanto and all of their genetically modified seed and repellents and so forth and so on, the stuff that they're into, which is absolutely horrific and not good for agriculture in the United States. And you've got farmers and ranchers out there, farmers out there who are farming and they're using Monsanto seed. Well, little old Cindy in her little homestead is going the extra mile to get non-GMO seed, open pollinated seed to put in my garden so that my garden, when I collect seeds from my garden, they reproduce true to themselves, and I can use that seed and get the same plants year after year. But
right.
If it gets mixed with Monsanto or vice versa, then we start to have some problems.
Yeah,
and
that could be part of the regulation. You know, Monsanto
Absolutely.
Could infuse just the right amount of money into the state legislature
sure.
to get and their lobbyists to insist that there should be no heirloom gardening, there will be only
Correct.
GMO gardening.
And they'll get big ag to come in and do that, big farmers in Missouri to come in and file those suits because they're going to say, well, my farming practices that are feeding the state of Missouri and da-da-da-da-da-da, I'm a rightful farmer, and these people that are planting their little GMO acres out here are ruining our seed and blah-de-blah-blah-blah. I see a potential there for harm to mm-hmm. the little guy that's out there, whether it's just, you know, we have, in the part of Missouri that I'm in, we have a lot of local farmers, a lot of farming going on here, and it's small farms, little farms, and they come to the farmers markets, and I visit some of those farmers markets, and I'm enjoying the produce that they're producing in their little greenhouses and so forth and so on. And I see real potential for them to be harmed by bigger ag if we're not careful. And I just think that this is an idea that really doesn't have merit. And I think that the unintended consequences could be huge. And I think it's an example of, you know, we've had people come into this state, HSUS, that tried to regulate our animals, you know,
yep.
the puppy mills, and in doing so, they were really after our big animal producers in the state. And they need, and I'm not saying that they don't need protection too, because they do, because HSUS was after them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the little guy that's going to get shut out first. And so I think that we just have to be careful that we aren't. And you know, I think some of the legislators thought that they would help protect us from some of these federal overreaches and regulations that are happening and so forth and so on. But I think it can be done I think there's a better way to do that than to keep amending our Constitution with new laws for things
right.
that we already have the right to do. And that's the bottom line. And that's where the Yankee Doodle comes in my mind, Lisa. It's giving us stuff that feels good and it sounds good, but nobody's asking, what are the unintended consequences? Where does this go when somebody takes it to the wall? And they will. They will, because there's so much at stake in this, and there are so many people with their finger in the pie. And trust me, it's not the little farmers out here, the little farm stand people out here in Missouri, and it's not me with my little homestead here in Missouri and others with little homesteads here in Missouri. It's the big guys that have the finger in the pie.
Yeah.
And and special interests that are after being able to control it all. And at the end of the day, there's not going to be anybody there to protect us. I can't afford, you know, if they come in
I
and they tell me
to
I have to quit doing this, I can't afford to go to court to challenge that.
Yeah, to protect my tomato garden. I can't afford it either. Well, let me ask you this, Cindy. Do we know who that sponsor of that bill was?
You know what?
Power to hand.
I do not know. I fell down on my job here.
Oh, no, that's okay. Do you know the bill number?
I know that Tim
Let's
Jones and Tom
okay.
Dempsey, the Senate Pro Tem, and of course they all signed off on it when it passed, but I don't know who the original sponsor of the bill was. That's something I need to find out.
Well, let's look it up real quick. Do you know what?
Yeah.
Do you know the bill number?
The bill number is.
Is that right of hand?
HJRS House Joint Resolution 11 and 7.
Oh, okay. Here we go. This year?
Yep, not 2014.
I'm not getting a search on it, so it must not have been this year. HJR 11?
Yep.
Maybe it was last year? Nope.
Oh, well, you know, would it have been? It could have been brought back up.
Let's try another bill search. Nope, I'm not getting anything. We'll find out, though. We'll try to find out. HJR 7. Nope, not getting anything this year. Okay, we'll try to find out.
Okay
so it's important, okay, because when you're thinking about these kinds of things, legislators never eliminate, they never go in and slash bills. They only create more legislation. And there was no need to bring this bill even out into the open because we already had the right to farm. We already had the right to ranch. Somebody is getting probably their pockets greased a little bit by special interests to bring this out. And this is a serious bill, folks. This is absolutely serious, and it's going to be on the ballot in August. And it's not good. And people will vote for it because it sounds...
And nobody's talking about it. It sounds good. It just sounds good.
And we need. We'll find out who the sponsors of those bills were of that bill, because it's obviously two joint resolutions. So maybe it was buried in an omnibus bill. That's why we can't find it.
Because it's. I did find it, but it's. I'm not finding who sponsored it, but I will. I'll find out before the. Sponsored by Representative Jason Smith, Rep. Bill Reibolt, and Mike Parson.
Interesting.
Yes. And it was to Missouri Farmers Care is looking forward to taking the case to protect farmers and ranchers to the voters. And it's Big Ag that is involved with this this bill. And I think that that ultimately their reason for being for this is more to push the little guy out in Missouri and to have major control. I really do. And so
it might be worth a little trip through their campaign finance reports to see what kind of contributions they've received in the last couple of years.
Right. I think that the Right to Farm bill, there is one of the things that I read that it exempts the Missouri Farm Bureau and big corporate farms from any regulation. It's just,
but not
I'm
you and
trying
me.
To find the original article that I read that was so good and so succinctly lined it out. But I think that the bottom line is that, you know, there's just, these questions need to be asked. They passed this legislation, and like you said, Lisa, it ends up not really protecting any of us. It makes them look good. It makes people feel good. But we're no more protected from the regulations and overreach of government power than we were before. And in the end, a lot of times what we end up with is that we're more regulated and we're more under the thumb of government when they do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean,
because
that's just a perfect
right to
example.
Farm in Missouri, they don't define what it is, and it goes to the courts. Then it gets defined, and then you've got a whole new can of worms opened up and a whole new road to travel to regain your right to farm, whether you're a backyard farmer, a backyard gardener, or you're looking to become a big agricultural producer, this could impact everybody in
yep.
the end. And
then you have an MRAP vehicle running down your street right through your tomato patch.
Exactly.
Pulling
up your tomatoes in your chicken coop.
Right.
I have a picture. It's
not a good one. Okay, let's talk about House Bill 1490. It's a big one here in Missouri. It deals with Common Core. Most of the folks across the country are dealing with Common Core in one way or another, and it's a hot button issue. Okay, here we go. I'm going to make a lot of people really angry tonight, and I'm sorry. I just want to apologize up front. I'm sorry for making you angry right now, but here's the deal, folks. People are crowing about the success of passing this 1490, and in reality, what has happened is you have cemented Common Core in Missouri. It is implemented. It is never going away, and there are people that have been fighting this issue and who are angry about it. They're all happy because we made some progress. We got something passed. People were paying attention. And what this bill started out as a one-paragraph bill submitted by Kurt Barr, and in its form would have been the perfect instrument to eliminate Common Core. What it ended up being was a little over 13 pages of a rationalization and doublespeak that absolutely makes Common Core something that will never go away in Missouri, and you will never know it. You won't even feel the needle going in, folks. It's that ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And this is in to no way disparage the hard work and education by the few folks out there who have been working tirelessly for years to fight this issue. But,
right.
You know, folks, we are at the point now in our government where you can no longer accept baby steps to take care of a problem. And this is why Yankee Doodle, it's so important for people to become schooled in the art of Yankee Doodle. Because in 2009, when the Tea Party rose up and you had people speaking at rallies, none of those folks were politicians. And once the politicians saw that the folks were rising up, they had to get a handle on this as soon as they could. So they started schmoozing with the Tea Party folks, ingratiating themselves into their company, and now the only thing that you see at Tea Party gatherings are politicians speaking. And I was at a little gathering last week in which I heard Kurt Barr bragging about this bill. The people in the room were all nodding their heads up and down, happy, you know, Kurt, you know, yay Kurt Barr. I mean, Kurt Barr's become one of the faithful, and you know, he's one of the Tea Party darlings in our state. Nice guy, you know, he's got a nice family and everything, but I'm telling you, folks, he's not working for you on 1490. And I don't know if it's intentional or not, but since it's his job to do this, I'm going to assume that it's intentional. And we're going to go over some things, and I'm just going to point out some things and tell you why this is not working for you. Okay, so House Bill 1490 started out as just a regular, innocuous, one-paragraph bill. Missouri will not implement Common Core is basically what it said. Okay, so there are a few points in this bill that just make me crazy. Let's see here. The State Board of Education, let's see, that's the redacted part of the bill. Okay, so the State Board of Education shall convene to work with groups composed of education professionals to develop and recommend academic performance standards, separate work groups composed of professionals, yada, yada. Okay, this is a redacted part of the bill. But what this bill has done is it demands that groups, work groups, are appointed by various members like the President Pro Tem of the Senate, the House of Representatives, the Board of Education, State Board of Education. They're going to appoint 16 board panels to oversee and study and evaluate. And if you've ever been part of a school district, you know anytime a school district wants to pull the wool over your eyes, what they do is they commission a study. They hand cherry pick a couple of parents to be on this big panel full of bureaucrats, and the bureaucrats run the show, and the parents don't get any say, and the school district gets what they want, and you walk away not really ever knowing what hit you in the face. And that's exactly what's happening here on a state level. 16, the President Pro Tem, the House of Representatives, the governor, various people are going to appoint educational professionals. Whenever the State Board of Education develops, evaluates, modifies, or revises academic performance standards or learning standards, it shall convene work groups composed of educational professionals to develop and recommend such academic performance standards or learning standards. Separate work groups composed of educational professionals shall be convened, yada, yada, yada. And it goes on. An educational professional serving on a work group shall be a Missouri resident for at least 3 years, if taught in the work group subject area for at least 10 years, or have 10 years of experience, and that's, oh, I can hear you, Cindy, except for the parents appointed by the President Pro Tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, yada, yada. Okay, so what does that tell you? Because it tells me the people that are going to be appointed to formulate these standards are going to be educrats from all across the state, longtime educrats entrenched in teachers' unions, entrenched in state board unions, all of these, you know, even though it does say specifically in this legislation that these people do not have to be members of the union, but they can be members of the union, yada, yada, yada. What does that tell you, Cindy?
It tells me that it's going to be business as usual.
Do you remember the show we had a few months back about the Delphi technique? Were you part of that?
I wasn't in on that particular show, but I do know some things about the Delphi technique. Yes.
Okay. So when Missouri Coalition Against Common Core and all of the coalition that was formed to educate folks around the state about Common Core early on in the process, sometime last year, there were meetings. It was demanded then by the state of Missouri or the Board of Education had to hold meetings across the state to educate folks about Common Core. So they held all of these meetings across the state, and we had our folks go to these meetings, and they knew.
And they were Delphi'd.
And they were Delphi'd. Absolutely.
They were.
You were not allowed to ask questions.
I do remember all of that, yes. Yes.
Yeah. They were absolutely Delphi'd. And I mean, and they've set it up legislatively so that they can be Delphi'd again, because the educrats are going to be running the show. They're going to be setting up standards and doing everything. So,
well, and the idea that we're going to maintain any kind of local control goes away with this.
And absolutely. And who's running the show? The State Board of Education. The State Board of Education shall also
start with.
Exactly. It's their job to set up these commissions. They have to do so by the end of this year. They have to start setting up these commissions by the end of this year, have hearings, yada, yada. It just blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind. Okay,
well,
so we're not even through page three, and here it's already a done deal. They've already stacked the deck.
Right.
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
You know, Lisa, you and I both know it was early to mid 2010 that Common Core hit the radar for a lot of us conservatives and a lot of conservative leaders in different groups. And we started questioning what the heck the governor was doing and what was this Common Core and so forth. And so it has taken us 4 years to get here. I remember in 2010 and early 2011, some of the very legislators that were so on board with this, still in office now, at that time, wouldn't even have a conversation with us about it.
Right. I remember
and
that
one. And shutting us down and shutting us up. We heard everything from the need to put condoms on our lips and kiss butts to, we didn't know what we were talking about, and some
right.
of the teachers that had been brave enough to come forward were just troublemakers to, I've been doing this for da-da-da-da-da years, and you're going to ruin everything I've been working for. And we were hearing all of this from legislators who were supposedly
yeah.
on our side. And now we have this. So now they've given us this bill. Here's the danger that I see with this, too, Lisa, in addition to what it's going to codify, is the fact that they've passed this legislation. It took us 4 years to get a BS piece of legislation.
Right.
That really isn't going to do anything to stop Common Core in our state or
no, it's going to implement
it. Of our children or through our education system.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, how do the people who have fought so hard and worked so hard, done so much research, friends of ours that we have watched just
right.
spend their lives doing this for the past 4 years, how do they go back to the legislature now and say, we need to do something because this is not good enough and it hasn't fixed it?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's
not
going to
happen.
To get them to pass a BS bill. What's
okay,
it going to do to get them to...
We're going to address that because I've got an answer for you, and we'll address that in a little bit. Okay, so this thing goes on to state, such curriculum frameworks shall incorporate the academic performance standards adopted by the State Board of Education pursuant to Section 1, yada, yada. And it does go on to say the curriculum framework shall provide guidance to school districts but shall not mandate for local school boards in the adoption or development of written curricula as required. But local school districts and charter schools may adopt their own educational standards in addition to those already adopted by the state. So you can adopt what you want as long as you go along with what the state standards are, provided the additional standards are in the public domain and are not in conflict with the standards adopted by the State Board of Education. So on page 4 it says you're not required to adopt them, and on page 3 it says that, and then on page 4 it says as long as it's aligns with the state standards from the State Board of Education. So, okay, so you're screwed there. That's not going to
yep.
happen.
Right.
The State Board of Education and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education shall not require districts to use any appendix to the Common Core of the state standards. Really? Really? Okay.
Sorry. That gives me for laughing.
The statewide assessment shall neither promote nor prohibit rote memorization. And okay, so this is I highlighted this because I'm thinking, what in the hell are they? Why are they getting into the weeds so deeply? The statewide assessment system shall neither promote nor prohibit the rote memorization and shall not include existing versions of tests approved for use pursuant to the provisions of Section 160, yada yada, nor enhance versions of such tests. After the State Board of Education adopts and implements academic performance standards, the State Board of Education shall develop and adopt standardized assessments and standardized assessment instrument under this section based on the academic performance standards adopted under such a section. Okay, you're so screwed. You are so screwed.
They basically, all they have done is they passed a piece of legislation that they sold as giving us the right to
yeah.
opt out in various school districts from
mm-hmm.
Common Core. But in reality, these districts are still going to have to comply with the state standards, which the state is going to adopt the Common Core given that opportunity, which they were just handed. They were just handed that opportunity on a silver platter by our legislature in this bill.
Exactly.
And so then all of these state school districts, it is the biggest lie. You can opt out, you know. No, you really can't. Because you can't do anything in conflict with the assessments and the curriculums that the State Board of Education adopts.
And do you know why they're going to align the assessments with Common Core? I know you know why.
Well,
they're
going to,
yeah, they're going to align the assessments with Common Core because the College Board is adapting their assessments to Common Core. So the
Absolutely.
Statewide system Yeah, so they have to in order to maintain accreditation, and it does address accreditation issues in here. Amazing. Let's see. So I have a question here. So how are these going to be administered? Because we know that a big part of Common Core and an expensive part of Common Core is that everything has to be administered electronically, and they have to retool the schools across the state to be able to handle these electronic assessments. So they're going to implement academic performance standards as required. The State Board of Education shall develop and adopt standardized assessment instrument under this section based on the academic performance standards adopted under 161.855. Okay, data collection, a huge, huge part of Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
The statewide assessments shall only permit the academic performance of students in each school in the state to be tracked against prior academic performance in the same school. Any student who receives special education, there is a special education implementation here. The work product from the Department of Higher Education Curriculum Alignment Initiative or any work in the public domain. Okay, so I want to get specifically to the data collection part of it because it's just absolutely amazing. And it's in the end. Okay, here's the data collection.
They really haven't protected us any better with this Common Core bill than they did with Prop C in protecting us against Obamacare.
It means nothing. Absolutely. That's a perfect analogy.
And they will be back, funding this crap, pardon me, in the future.
Yep.
Just like they've been back and they've tried to implement these insurance exchanges and Medicaid reform and all of this stuff to comply with the federal government's regulations under Obamacare, basically implementing and instituting Obamacare in the state in spite of the fact that the people of Missouri by 71% voted against Obamacare, because that's what the people were doing when they passed Prop C.
That was their intent.
And it doesn't matter that the bottom line is that we were deceived, we are being deceived again. We were led down the yellow brick road, and this is another yellow brick road leading to Oz. And
yeah,
we all know
the same players.
We all know what really lived in Oz.
And some of the same players are doing this. I mean, do you kind of
draw
the correlation? Yes. So, okay, so for the data collection on this issue, the State Board of Education, they have to create and make public the data inventory index of what exactly they're going to collect from you. Any personal identifiable student data is required to be reported by the state. There's a whole long list on the data collection here. It's not stopping them from collecting the data. All it's really doing is requiring that they have to tell you what they're going to collect of the data. They're not supposed to send it to MorphoTrust or anybody else. But the authorized staff of the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education and the contractors working on the behalf of the department who require such access to perform their assigned duties as required by law. So basically, because the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education is going to adopt Common Core, and they are making up all the rules, and they are in charge of collecting the data, they're going to basically collect data under the guidelines of what Common Core is. They just have to tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is before they didn't have to notify anybody. They have to notify the governor. New student data proposed for inclusion in the state student data system, changes to existing data collection required for any recent changes. You know, they have to notify the governor of all these things. The Department of Elementary and Secondary Education shall not collect, nor shall school districts report the following individual student data. Okay, court records, criminal records, yada, yada, yada. Here's the kicker on this data collection deal. So if for any reason your student is in school and you find out they're collecting data they're not supposed to be collecting, or they're sharing it with people they're not supposed to share it with, or they're not telling you what they're collecting, or for whatever reason they step outside whatever all these two pages of boundaries are for data collection, here's the penalty for that. here's what's going to happen to require that they don't get, you know, this is a deterrent, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Each violation of any provision of any rule promulgated pursuant to this section by an organization or entity other than a state agency, a school board, or an institution shall be punished by a civil penalty of up to $1,000. $1,000. A second violation is $5,000 penalty, and any subsequent violation is $10,000. Now, to these multi-million-dollar school districts, if a parent's suing $1,000, what's that going to do to somebody?
Right.
To a school district? Is that going to stop? Okay. The Attorney General shall have the authority to enforce the compliance of this section. Okay. So we know how well that's worked for us in the past. Remember, okay, remember the Department of Revenue scandal last year here in Missouri?
Mm-hmm.
When the state, against the law, was implementing Real ID here in Missouri, and it was a big scandal, and we were waiting for the Attorney General to bring the governor up on charges on that, and people were complaining about it. Now, you know, I have a file in Washington, D.C., with my face that I own a handgun. My biometric photograph is there. All of my, my blood type, everything is there. Yours is there. Everybody in Missouri. And nothing happened because of our Attorney General. He never followed through with that. So he's going to follow through if I want to file a lawsuit against this local school district that my child's data has been collected illegally, and because there's a fine of $1,000.
And even if he does, is that going to erase the data from the files people who have collected it illegally? Is it going to erase that data from the files of the people that it was shared with illegally? Once the harm has been done, the harm has been done, and they're going to get a slap on the wrist. If you can even get the Attorney General to pursue it.
If you can get him to do it. I mean,
you put the burden on the parents to know what data is being collected in the school on their children and to know when they're being violated and when they aren't.
Absolutely.
And I do believe the parents have a responsibility to not allow that and to be more involved with their children than they are today. But you're unleashing the whole entire public education bureaucracy on the parents, and the burden of proof is with the parents, really.
Yep. And it's kind of like the tomato patch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you going to hire a lawyer to get a $1,000 penalty against your school district? You know, if it's big and you can get enough parents involved and engaged, which is the problem,
you could probably do a class action. You could probably have something.
But
it's not going to stop them in what they're doing.
Yep. Okay, so here's the deal. Let's draw another parallel to the Department of Revenue scandal. Everybody was really hot this time last year after the legislative session was over that nothing was done over the Department of Revenue scandal in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Tim Jones put together a bogus committee to study the issue, you know, which he cherry-picked people who did absolutely nothing but delay, dodge, and weave. And at the end, they came up with the conclusion that he wanted them to come up with. There was nothing that they could do because he knew going in that any violations committed by the governor were misdemeanors as they are outlined in Missouri statutes. But it looked good to have a committee appointed. Okay, so here we are. The next legislative session has come and gone. Most people have forgotten about the Department of Revenue scandal. And here we are. You know, we're on to the next crisis. Now we're talking about Common Core. So by the end of this year, these educratic study groups have to be formed by December 2014. The work groups shall develop and recommend academic performance standards to the State Board of Education by October 1st, 2015. And the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education shall pilot assessments from the Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium, which is Common Core,
mm-hmm.
That's the Common Core standards. By the 2014-2015 school year, and the State Board of Education shall adopt and implement academic performance standards beginning in the year 2016-2017. What are you going to be doing then? Common Core is just going to be a wisp in the wind by 2016-2017 in the minds of most people. What has this piece of legislation done for you and your children and your right to parent, your right to choose education, your right to maintain local control in your schools, and to eliminate Common Core?
Mm-hmm.
Not a damn thing. Okay, so the next time you see a Missouri state legislator crowing about House Bill 1490,
mm-hmm.
please tell them from me that they can go piddle
right.
up a chalkboard, because I'm not
yep.
impressed.
No, I'm not impressed either.
They have done nothing but put the nail in the coffin on Common Core. It is here. It's here to stay, folks. It's not going anywhere.
It is. And when I think of the tremendous work that so many have done so faithfully
Absolutely.
To educate this legislature about Common Core, it would seem to me that everything that they were telling them fell on deaf ears, and they just grappled. I would like to know where this bill originated. Was it something that came out of ALEC?
That's a great question.
Do we even
question.
Know? Because we know that our legislators really don't write these bills, so where did it originate? Who,
yeah.
who came up with this brilliant brainchild to stop Common Core in Missouri, which it's not going to do? I mean, when you, listening to all of this, it's just, you know, you could almost become despondent when I think about all the work that has been done by so many good people in this state to inform and to put a and to try to stop this, and it's coming. It would be better for this initiative to be defeated and to go back
and start
try
over.
Again than to let it be passed. It really would,
and yeah.
I say that really understanding how hard some people worked for this.
But absolutely.
It would be the same thing with Prop C. We should have lost. We would have been better off if Prop C had been defeated.
Yeah, you know, everybody
Especially
says...
Especially because the legislators just crow about it, and it didn't do one thing to really protect us in the end. Because whatever teeth it had were taken out long before it ever went to the ballot.
Yep.
And at that time, we were told by legislators to sit down and shut up, because if we weren't careful, we wouldn't get Prop C. And too many people involved with that, myself included, were naive enough to believe that we were still going to get something worthwhile. And we
did the referendum.
And the same thing is happening with Common Core. And I'm only bringing it up as a comparison, because for those who fought for Prop C, you and I all know that we did not really get protected
Mm-mm.
in the end from Obamacare. We have no teeth in that whatsoever to protect the people of Missouri. Our legislators just did something to keep the Tea Party busy and to get us entrenched with the Republicans in the Missouri legislature.
Yep, dangle a shiny object over here while we're taking your rights away over there.
And they use the Yankee Doodle legislation to get it done, to make people believe that they're really doing something that is going to really benefit. They don't even fully understand the issue that they're working on, and that is very clear to me when I look at what they've done with this Common Core bill and knowing what Common Core is and what all it encompasses and the data collection system, that this bill, in the end, will codify Common Core in the state of Missouri.
Yep, that's the end of it. That's it, folks. It's here to stay. You're not getting rid of it.
And that's a tragedy, because there's been a lot of time and work put into it. And, people will wake up, but when they wake up, it's going to be too late. And look at what it's taken to get people to... look at what it's taken to get people involved in and to educate the public, some of the public, on Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
And that job is not even complete.
Nope, yeah. And it's gonna go by the wayside, just like the Department of Revenue issued it, went by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over. It's all over, folks. So, and that's the Yankee
stop.
Doodle. So let's talk about how this was presented to you. okay? You had people like Senator Lamping and Kurt Barr and various other people who were players in this situation who were supposedly fighting for you, okay? Now, these folks, I'm sorry. These folks knew what was going on the whole time. They've been in Jefferson City for a while. They know how the game is played. And, you know, you're not going to go back next year and you're not going to tweak it. You're not going to get anything through. And you don't have time, folks. I mean, it's already in. And, you know, they're going to need to start the money is going to need to start flowing in here and there. It's going to be a financial issue because they're going to have to start retooling school districts for computers to line up with the testing. Because if you want your school district, here's what they'll use. This is the carrot they'll use. It's your school district's accreditation hanging in the balance. Because kids that are graduating from high school will not be able to get into college because their curriculums are not lined up with the college board assessments. And so accreditation is going to tumble and people will panic because their kids will not be able to get in college, not really understanding what it means now to get your kid into a Common Core college.
Correct.
People, they're not going to understand that. So that's the carrot they're going to dangle in front of the masses that are disengaged, and that's how they're going to seal the deal. It's all over but the crying. And these folks know that. They did not fight for you. They could have killed the bills once they went into committees and got way out of hand. Instead, they continued to push them through. They didn't fight to remove that language. They didn't fight to put this in the hands of the legislature rather than the hands of the State Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was a big part of the problem to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. So, folks, when you
another
got,
unintended consequence.
Go ahead.
Another unintended consequence of this, Lisa, is that what is this going to do to homeschoolers and the curriculums that they're going to, if they want their kids to go to college, and they're going to have, you know, homeschoolers are going to be asking themselves some very difficult questions over the next few years. And because homeschoolers, if they want their children to go to college, are going to have to comply with, they're going to have to comply with this.
Yeah, they'll have to be able to pass the college board test. Yeah, and homeschool curriculums are already being revamped to align with Common Core, because you know every state has their own criteria to meet. You know, their state statutes for homeschooling is different everywhere than it is in Missouri, and other states have much more stringent legislation that requires kids to be tested. We don't have to do that here in Missouri. There's a lot of things. You don't have to submit portfolios and things like that we don't have to do here in Missouri. So the curriculum companies have to, if they want to stay in business, they have to be able to supply curriculum that aligns to Common Core. It's already happening. It's already done. It's very sad. It's very sad. It's very sad. So here's my Yankee Doodle speech, folks. Okay. You no longer have the luxury to keep these folks up on a pedestal and treat them like rock stars. If you're looking at your legislator as your friend, you're not holding them accountable because those folks did not fight hard enough to stop this. And every last one of them, no one is exempt, knew how this was going to play out. And they knew how this legislation, you know, whoever, and we ought to go back. For next week, I'll go back and I'll get the voting list on this bill. And we'll find out who voted for these bills. And once they pass, we'll name names here next week on Culture Vigilante. And you need to hold these folks accountable, folks. This is not a good bill. It's not helping you. When they go out and they make their stump speeches, because this is an election year for our legislature, and they're going to tell you how great 1490 is, you need to look them in the eye and tell them that they're lying to you.
Right.
That they're not doing you a favor, and you need to, even the Tea Party sweethearts that we've come to love and cherish and worship in some levels, you know, if these folks are voting for these bills, it's because they're being told to by their leadership. And they're not working for you. And if you ever want to stop this kind of crap in its tracks, you've got to make these people afraid of retaining their positions. even your favorites, and call them on the carpet. Ask them. We have an issue coming up. You know, we're getting ready to change House leadership here in Missouri. You know, our Speaker of the House has not been good. He's been kind of he's done some really questionable things, I've certainly not been a fan of this guy. Well, the guy coming up right behind him is even worse. And you need to ask your state representative, did you vote to put this guy in leadership? I asked that to Kurt Barr last week, and he wouldn't tell me. Uh-huh. He would not go on record as to whether or not he voted for John Deal for House leadership. They don't, when you got to ask them the tough questions, and you got to
right.
if their actions do not line up with their words, folks, they are not working for you, and you got to quit sending them back to office.
Well, and it's like I saw someone on our chat board that said they don't like questions. They don't like to ask questions.
They
don't. But you know what? That's too bad because they work for us. We don't work for them.
That's right.
They're elected to represent the people. We are the people. We pay their salary. And they have agreed that they ran for and did their thing to be a public servant. Now be a public servant.
Absolutely.
And stop treating us like minions when we dare to ask you questions. We have a responsibility to ask you questions. We are part of the process.
And one final point.
Instead of being defensive, they listened to the questions and gave thoughtfully considered their answer to the question and said, I need to research that because I'm not sure. If they had the guts to do that and to do the research and become informed legislators, they wouldn't pass half the garbage that they pass.
Yep. And one final point I want to punctuate with your ability to get back, to get control again, because the Tea Party has been infiltrated and it has been neutralized because you've allowed it to be. But here's something that needs to happen. In 2008, when we were all attending Tea Party rallies, we had Tea Party speakers speaking at rallies, outlining what we want, outlining what needs to be done. It was very energizing and it was very uplifting. Okay? Mm-hmm. Politicians have since infiltrated that realm. Okay? And they have also infiltrated what's so-called conservative media. I mean, Fox News, is just not what it started out to be. We have local media here in the St. Louis area where I live that regularly gives airtime to Republican candidates purporting to be the conservative media here. Like there's one radio station here in St. Louis that lets the Speaker of the House guest DJ or, guest host talk radio shows to fill in for the regular hosts. I mean, he's going to be running for lieutenant governor. That's free campaigning right there. That's time that he gets
right.
to spend 3 or 4 hours on the air doing nothing but spinning.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not working for folks. We've got newspapers and online bloggers that give these people publish their commentary. As guest bloggers, folks, you cannot be objective if you're cozying up to people who are supposed to be working for you. Those folks have plenty of opportunity. They've got the bully pulpit. They've got the platform. They can communicate with you well enough. They do not need to do it through your conservative media. So what I would suggest that you do, if you want to gain control, you need to contact the radio stations and the bloggers and the online newspapers and tell them, you don't appreciate them giving carte blanche, free advertising, free campaign time to these so-called Republican elected officials, candidates, whatever, and go one step farther than that. Contact the sponsors of this conservative media. A lot of people do not like to boycott. I think boycotting is a very effective thing. If you don't want to boycott, at least write a letter and tell the sponsor of that media that you do not appreciate how that radio station is conducting business or how that blogger is conducting their business, and that will get their attention. Because we can no longer allow elected officials to use our platforms for their spin, because it is absolutely dangerous. It pollutes the message, and it absolutely muddies the waters. There's not one of those elected officials is going to tell you any of the things that I told you about 1490 tonight. Not one of those elected officials is going to tell you about the right to farm bill that initiative that's on the ballot. They're not going to talk about it the way that we spoke about it here tonight, folks.
No.
So,
if you want to
get back control and really see some action that benefits you as a Missouri voter, as a United States citizen, you've got to take these people off their pedestals, quit giving them a platform. They've got a platform already. Watch how they perform when they're doing their job, and let it end there.
Right. And you know, we made the mistake of letting certain legislators have microphones and speak as one of us back.
Yep.
And
they're still doing it.
2009, 2010, et cetera. And it was a very bad precedent to set. And we should have stayed with the idea that these legislators should come to our meetings to listen, not speak.
Absolutely. Because at that time, they were milling around in the crowd. They were walking around the unwashed masses. You know, they were not up on the stage. And you had a chance to talk to them, look them in the eye, ask them a question.
Right.
And they were
and
in a much different position. Yeah, absolutely.
And, and even the ones that were elected out of that movement, they need to be put in that place too, because once you're in that legislature, you're in a unique environment. I get it. I know it's a cesspool. I know that the rules they play by are really bad, and they need to change. But the fact of the matter is that we're not helping new legislators to stand on their two feet when we don't hold their feet to the fire and we don't ask the hard questions of them, even if they're people that we trust, even if they're people we've worked to get there. In fact, we have more of a responsibility to do that when we have worked hard for them to get them there, to help keep them honest, straightforward, and to remember why they ran and what they're really there for.
Absolutely.
You cannot give them a free pass on things just because. And it is no kindness to anybody to put them on a pedestal, because we're all human and we all make mistakes.
Yeah, and you need to change the idea that politics is a career. You know, we don't.
Yeah.
If you think that it's a good thing to keep them there for years and years and years, they're going to think the same thing, and
correct.
You know, you can't do that. We just have to stop that, folks. That's what's gotten us into the trouble we're in.
Right. And we have to do that. We have to. And it was a terrible mistake that was made by a lot of group leaders, and you know it's. And we're paying for that mistake. And it's time to correct that and to no longer continue to walk down that path and to do that. We just cannot. And you know, Lisa, it's not disrespectful to ask the hard questions of your legislator.
No, it's not.
It's just not disrespectful. And it is, you know, many of us took the beating from legislators in meetings who stood up and said, you know, where have you been all of these years? And now you suddenly think you can come in and you can, you know, you need to be engaged, you need to be involved, you've been absent, and we've been doing the best we could do. Okay, well, we're here now. So sit down, shut up, and listen.
There you go.
Do your job, you know.
Do your job.
Instead, we cowed and we started putting them on pedestals, and we never should have let that happen. We were wrong to do it, and it's something that needs to be fixed. And it's why the Tea Party in Missouri has failed.
They're not your friend. That's right.
They're not there to be your buddy.
That's right. And when you start thinking of them as a friend, that's you're part of the problem. You're not part of the solution. They can't be
you're
your friend
boss.
Anymore. Yeah, that's right. You can't fraternize with
people. It doesn't mean you have to go in with guns blazing. It doesn't mean you have to go in with, you know, the equivalent of a hatchet to take your head off or something. It just means that we have a responsibility as citizens to ask the hard questions and to
Hold them accountable. You have to hold them accountable.
Yep.
That's it. You can't do that if they're your friend. Right.
And nobody in Jefferson City is going to hold, they're not going to hold each other accountable. They're going to play the political games because they've got this little system worked out there. The Democrats and the Republicans, they play it together. They play it within each party. It is what it is. But the bottom line is the only one who can hold them accountable is us. The only one who can hold them accountable are the bloggers and the news media. And they can't do that if they're putting them on their newspapers and on their blogs and letting them spew and spin their version of why such and such is good for the people.
Right. All right. We'll wrap it up.
So that's my 2 cents worth.
That's right. Good job. Thank you, Cindy McGee. I've kept you over. I know that you've got to run and get back to the garden. But thank you for joining me tonight. Thank you for all that great information on the Right to Farm Bill. Hope to see you maybe here next week. We're going
to
take
a break. I'll try to have some more of the information on that for you.
Okay. We'll get the voting records on that, too. That'd be helpful, too.
Yep.
Okay. We'll see you here next week. We're going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
Yankee Doodle came to town riding on a pony. Put a feather in his hand and called it macaroni.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
I've got a feeling that the night is turning.
Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We had a great discussion about Yankee Doodle. Hope you took it to heart. If you want to contact me on my Facebook page, Culture Vigilante, or I'm also on Twitter. Let me know what you think of that. Share this podcast with your friends, folks. This is important because, you know, if we don't start changing the way we think, we had a nice little victory yesterday. The folks in Virginia booted Eric Cantor out. You know, I don't know if that was a product of the Democrats crossing over and voting in the Republican primary or not, but regardless, he's out. You know, we got to take these little victories where we can get them, and we need to start chipping away as quickly as we can at the Rhino Republican establishment stronghold and start putting some real conservatives in office. And we can't do that if we can't recognize, I mean, it's easy to see, you know, people like John Boehner and Eric Cantor and, you know, a few of the others, Lindsey Graham, who, you know, are obviously not working on our best interests. Sometimes it's a little harder. And we have a lot of folks here in Missouri who spew the Yankee Doodle very well, but are not really working real hard for you. You need to look at these folks' voting records. You need to look at their legislation that they've passed or have not passed. How hard are they fighting for the real important issues? Do they go out on a campaign stump and tell you that, you know, I'm for this, I'm for that, but, you know, do they really put their neck on the line to get it put through? You know, when actions don't line up with words, you need to take a second look at these people and you need to take them down off their pedestals. And it makes people very angry when you tell them that their idols may not be all they're cracked up to be. But I'm telling you, folks, some of these folks are very crafty. They've learned how to speak political conservative jargon so that you are mesmerized by the words that are coming out of their mouths. And it's not serving us well. So we need to change that attitude right away. I want to play an interview for you. If you missed it last week, we had Ryan Payne from Operation Mutual Aid on, told us about his experiences on the Bundy Ranch, and I want to replay that interview for you now. This is Lisa Payne-Nanger. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and like I said before the break, I am very happy to have back on with me tonight Mr. Ryan Payne. Ryan Payne is with Operation Mutual Aid. He's kind of the command with this. It's a militia type of an organization. He's here with us tonight to talk a little bit about some of the things that happened at the Bundy Ranch and to kind of give us some more information about what this militia movement is and what it means to the United States. Thanks for being back here with me today. And I know you've been a very busy guy over the last couple of months.
Quite. Yeah, things ramped up there all of a sudden, it seems like.
Yeah, so you were on with me, the last half of last year, and it was the first time I had ever really been exposed to any of this militia movement. We kind of talked a little bit about what really kind of tried to educate them, that, hey, you know, there is a militia movement out there of concerned citizens networked and been together to kind of start, you know, push back against this anti-constitutional rhetoric down from our government. Can we kind of get a little bit of an overview of that kind of movement and what Operation Mutual Aid is and how you guys kind of found each other?
Sure. The Operation Mutual Aid is based around its mission statement. And very generally, the mission statement says that we will be the barrier between tyrants and the oppressed. And this is imperative in a state of liberty, that there be those types of individuals that are willing to stand between tyrants and oppressors. As everyone is aware of historically, they can get pretty mean. They can get downright violent and do incredibly horrible things. So it's imperative that individuals step forward to form that barrier. Now, I want to specify also that it's a little more of an association than an organization, based on the fact that Operation Mutual Aid's mission statement does form a unity around a common sentiment, but as in the Bunkerville situation with the Bundy Ranch, the structure of command is formed on the ground, and if there is a unit that's present that holds jurisdiction in the area, for instance, you know, the local county militia unit, they would form the command structure, and then there would, you know, hopefully present itself a leadership council. So, but all that stuff is done on the ground once, you know, there's a combined action formed, like Bunkerville. Outside of that, it's just basically a network, and it's a bunch of militia units and individuals from across the country that have all agreed to that mission statement, and they either volunteer locally for their own state or for possibly their region of states, and some people, they volunteer nationally. and God bless all of them for what they do.
No kidding. You know, and I think one of the things that just struck me the most, which was the most surprising to me the last time we spoke, was that there were that many of the like-minded mission of folks across the country who wanted to band together to do this kind of thing, who felt the same way. I mean, basically, you folks are all committed to putting your life on the line to protect folks who are in need of protection, who are being who their constitutional rights are being trampled on by their local or even federal government, as we saw in the case of Clive and Bundy. And you are willing to do it. You'll come from all over the country. You'll leave your families, your jobs, your homes, and put everything on the line to stand up for what's right. I mean, it's, you know, from the outside looking in, it's a pretty amazing network.
And I've told numerous people this, the men and the women that I met and know through the Bunkerville situation take up the majority of the best people that I've ever known in my life and possibly will ever know. They're very dedicated. They know the Constitution. They know what their rights are. One of the very common traits was that they're God-fearing people, these people from all over the country that believe in this cause, because, you know, our rights come from outside of the government, and you can consider them natural rights, and for most of us who are God-fearing, that means that those rights come from the God of nature. And I met very few atheists. Very few atheists, we'll put it that way. I agree, and I commend all of them. Once again, I can't thank them enough. I'm sure the Bundy family, as they always express their great thanks.
You know, and so I mean, it's very heartening, because whether they get there, whether they derive this from the Constitution or God, you know, it's very in this culture. This day and age, it is just so heartening to see that many people with that strong of a character. Character is so lacking in our culture today. People don't even think about it anymore. They don't really respect it. They don't, it's just not really taught. And, you know, it's just amazing the type of character that it takes for people to stand up under those kind of circumstances and possibly make those kinds of sacrifices for what they believe in. Just truly, truly amazing to me.
Yeah, you talk about the moral fiber, the
absolutely
character. There's a lot of characters out there. There's very few of very high moral character, exceptional character, and the people that surround the Bundys, the militiamen and the patriots that responded to the call in Bunkerville, they carried that trait. And that was a high moral fabric that they're made of. So they are out there. It's just there's three things specifically that I attribute to this moral character. And the majority of these people you'll find have these three traits in mind all the time. And truth, love, and unity. And they base their decisions and judge the world based on their knowledge of the truth. They're very giving. Obviously, they're giving of themselves. To quote the last sentence of the Declaration of Independence, they're willing to give their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor in pursuit of freedom for all. And the last one there, unity, to be able to form that cohesion with people from all over the country and accomplish the goal is it just outlines the type of individuals that answer that call.
Yeah, I don't think you would have been as successful if you hadn't had that foundation. Okay, tax here. First of all, okay, so early in April, I would imagine you guys were watching the situation long before it was on any of our radar screens. How did you find out about the situation at the Bundy Ranch?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I remember the last time we talked, we were preparing to make the call to go into West Virginia, supporting the Jared Markham case. And, you know, there was about 2 weeks there before that operation was supposed to happen of being able to make those contacts and all that stuff. This situation was much different. I heard about it on that Sunday. before the standoff.
Really?
So exactly a week. Yeah, exactly a week before, I made contact with Mr. Bundy the following morning, and by that afternoon, I was on the road and arrived there at about seven in the morning on Tuesday. And then the standoff happened. There was already snipers and such, which is kind of what brought us there. It didn't take much. Once I saw pictures of snipers sitting on the hilltop staring at the family, we knew it was time.
Okay. I mean, we're pretty much well aware that, I mean, they had pretty much an arm, kind of a paramilitary situation set up, you know, snipers and tanks and whatever. But can you kind of give us an idea of what you saw when you first got there and kind of outline, you know, what does it feel like to walk, you know, to walk into a situation here on American soil where you could see this kind of situation? Just, I mean, the Bundys are really sweet people. You know, they're certainly not equipped. You know, they were not walking into the Waco, Texas situation. You know, they weren't armed to the hilt, and they were just ranchers.
Right. Yeah, the situation itself didn't feel all that foreign to me, having served a couple tours in Iraq, as far as the stress level or the threat level. But as you said, it did feel much different that this was happening on our own soil. You know, the people that are behind those sniper rifles, the people that are tasing innocent citizens, they're us. They're our brothers. They're amongst us. And it is the most deplorable situation that we find ourselves in when our own countrymen are pointing their guns at us. And I can't say that it's in anger. I know that, you know, I don't think those guys want to be there pointing guns at Americans. There's a lot of situations that have been talked about that kind of have presented themselves in a funny way. For instance, Daniel P. Love, the BLM special agent in charge, he had the demeanor, he carried himself, he had a very long beard and goatee, ball cap, sunglasses, chest plates, body armor. He looked like a private military contractor. And there was a few of those agents that did look like that. And that's one of the things I noticed when I arrived, was seeing who was there. It didn't appear like a normal, what would you expect from a land management agency.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had snipers on the hilltops there. They had one position that was overlooking the ranch until me and the gentleman from my local unit arrived. And then they moved that sniper position over to overwatch the protesters. They had some type of communications, mobile communication setups, wandering throughout the desert around the ranch. At one point, there was speculation. I didn't actually confirm it with my own eyes, but somebody said they landed an AH-64 Apache attack helicopter on top of the mesa overlooking their camp. So, yeah, the situation was fairly escalated. It was to that point where there was military force being brought upon American citizens.
So did you ever really have an opportunity to have contact and conversations with those folks, or where you could, I mean, I can't even imagine looking those folks in the eye and just wondering what they were thinking. You know, what does it take? You got to have a pretty cold heart to draw on American citizens like that.
Yeah, and I think that notion of how difficult that must be, although we know that humans are not above it. The situation has presented itself numerous times throughout history. But I think that the infeasibility of it, of the act, kind of promotes those, I'm not sure if they're conspiracy theories or if they're based in facts, but the notion that they may have been hired mercenaries or even foreign troops of some sort. I think that the difficulty of that notion kind of fuels that paranoia, that speculation. And that's unfortunate as well. This is not a natural feeling situation, and it draws out the best and the worst in people.
Yeah, that to me, that's just amazing. So you guys got there, immediately diffused the situation. I mean, you could kind of tell once the protesters started to arrive, once they found out that you were there, they kind of took a second glance at storming the fences of the Bundy Ranch. Can you tell me anything about what was going on inside the Bundy headquarters there? You know, can you tell me anything about the Bundys and what they were experiencing? I would imagine they would have been scared to death. Although they seem very brave to me.
They are, and it's because they have that fear of God. They're a very religious family, so the fear of life and pain and suffering and such doesn't seem to strike them as it does a lot of other people. But, yeah, the situation definitely seemed to de-escalate as soon as we arrived. The Tuesday when I arrived, there was no other militia there. And so I immediately started making all those calls, and I did so on the drive down there as well to start getting people coming to let them know that the situation was getting pretty dire and was probably going to require some help. The Bundys themselves, they have known that this day was coming. It was a foregone conclusion to them. The escalation of, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was still a state of disbelief when it did happen. They weren't necessarily maybe convinced, but they had studied enough. They've studied enough history that they know how tyrannical governments act. Mr. Bundy has been involved in I hate to call it the politics of the rancher movement in Nevada, but he's been involved with even some other counties and helping to write up court cases and such. So they're not ignorant to how the course was going to go. And I think what was at first just a scare tactic, kind of an intimidation to get the Bundys to buckle in some way, the amount of resources and the type of personnel, snipers and such, sharpshooters, they just went way too far. And the Bundys, they set themselves up very quickly to get this out to the public so that everyone would know what our government was doing, what not only what they're capable of, but what they were actually doing, that there's been a lot of speculation would happen at some point. And they set up all the media contacts that they needed to. They hit the social media pretty hard, and they did a pretty good job of keeping the public informed. Now, you had another element to this, which was misinformation being spread all over the place. This became very apparent to all of us as the situation moved on. And not just misinformation, but what appeared to be purposeful disinformation. So we ask ourselves there again, do our fellow citizens have a motivation for performing a disinformation campaign against us? And I can't think of any except for the ones that hold power, because they're the ones that control the action that's happening. So the only plausible scenario that we could come up with was that the federal government was waging a disinformation campaign against us, utilizing social media, and as we know, they use the mainstream media for such. They were fairly effective in it. We weren't necessarily planning on a federal response being the first Operation Mutual Aid mission. And the assets that the federal government can conjure up are far superior to that local governments can conjure up, although the pipeline of federal money going into these counties is for that purpose, to build their capabilities and basically be a remote arm of the federal government.
In your opinion, had you guys not shown up, I'm sure the federal government never expected the response that they got, from the protesters and the militia showing up. In your opinion, had there not been that kind of response, do you think that they would have proceeded and attacked the Bundys based on what you know?
Well, first off, some would say that not only did they expect that response, if they're watching at all, the discontent that the people have with what the government is doing. Some would say that they went to such a length to purposely draw out those individuals that would respond to such a situation. Maybe 10 years ago, a lot of people would say that sounds conspiratorial. I don't think that we're at that stage anymore. We're kind of figuring out that all the conspiracies are true.
Right.
And on the second note, I can't say whether or not they would have. I hope to God they would not have pulled the trigger on innocent Americans. And there again, whether they backed off because there again on Saturday, April 12th, the standoff, whether they backed off because they didn't want to shoot at American citizens, you know, they felt that the situation had been escalated enough, it was time to go, there's no need for this, or whether they backed off because a bunch of armed militia and individual patriots showed up and pointed guns right back at them and actually had complete tactical superiority in the situation. It's difficult to say which one of those is the case. I hope it's because they don't want to fire on Americans.
Well, Ryan, you were boots on the ground. You were in the Bundy home. You were the commander in charge there, organizing the area. You were with the Bundys on a daily basis. You got to know them fairly well. I want to give you an opportunity to tell us what you witnessed, because the media took a real horrible hack at Clive and Bundy. They tried very hard to disparage him and a smear campaign against him for comments that he made that were totally taken out of context. I would kind of like to have your opinion of what you learned about the Bundys and Clive and Bundy and what you saw there.
Yeah, well, first off, I have to clarify that the position that I occupied in Bunkerville was as a liaison, the militia liaison, not a commander, because
okay.
The leadership overall, as I said before, is more of a coalition. The leaders get together of the different units, and the individuals are welcome to fall in with a unit that's there or form up in the unorganized militia unit that gets formed. And so you want all of the leadership. Militia is free people. It's not like the military where you have a rigid structure and a uniform code of military justice. These are free men and women who are, as you said, stated before, they're sacrificing possibly their jobs. Some people came and were homeless because of it. They lost their home and all of it. So we can't necessarily expect a rigid structure to be the preferred method because we want as much freedom as possible. So it's organized like a Republican government, if you will. But at any rate, so as far as the liaison position, what happened when I arrived, it began that relationship with the Bundys and Mr. Bundy specifically, and built a trust. And the difficult part of that trust was that I kept assuring him that there was a lot of people coming, and they really didn't arrive in force like that until Friday and Saturday. So he, you know, that was the purpose, is to build that trust so that we can work together the most effectively. And Mr. Bundy he did not seem shaken when I arrived, and he drove me around, kind of gave me a tour of everything in the area. We drove around for about an hour, and then we had a discussion. We established three objectives that we felt were pertinent to people that would be showing up to provide protection to the Bundys. So the militia objectives the first objective being to protect the Bundys and the protesters and everyone involved, including, we wanted to specify that included the federal agents and the law enforcement that were there. The whole goal is that nobody gets hurt. The second objective was the opening of all the public lands that had been closed down by the BLM for this cattle rustling, and then maintaining the openness of those lands. And there's still militia on the ground maintaining the openness of that public land, and they did a good job of making sure that it was reopened. Number three is to help the Bundys out with rebuilding their infrastructure. The BLM tore out a lot of their spring works, water troughs and such that their family has built up over the last 130 years. and they need help getting that stuff put back together. So that's another thing I would implore anybody listening, if you want to do a service, that's a great one to take up. And it is resistance to the government at the same time, to a tyrannical mm-hmm. government.
Absolutely.
But as far as the Bundys themselves are concerned, as I said before, they're just they have impeccable character. It's great to see a family structure. They work cohesively as a unit. Mr. Bundy is definitely the patriarch of a very religious family. They're all Mormons, and they all attend the church. Some of them hold positions within the church. And it was interesting for me to find out from Ryan Bundy that the prophets of the Mormon church have spoken over time since the mid-1800s about the cohesion between a religious people and a free government, or excuse me, a free country, and how the Constitution solidified that. And so the Mormon church, even built within its structure, seems to be a goal of educating themselves on the Constitution. They reference it all the time. And you can see that in the videos if you watch the Bunkerville, the stuff that happened there at the standoff and afterwards. And see all those cowboys, they're all very educated in the Constitution. So it's just a great family. It seems like everyone that's around them is fantastic, and I couldn't speak highly enough of them.
Okay. Ryan, I can't thank you enough for coming on the program and giving me an update on this. I've been trying to get a hold of you for a long time, but you have been obviously very busy and hopefully spending some time with your family. You're back home now, I take it, right?
Yes, I've been back home for a couple of weeks. It's nice to be back with the family.
I bet
it is. Definitely. We'll have to – it's a very confusing situation on the ground there, and there's a lot of running around to do, and the media liaison crew that I put together, I didn't get them your name and number. So next time we'll take care of that. We'll make sure you got it.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want to be in the loop. Although I was able to get quite a bit of information from some of your folks out there. Are you folks kind of still on the ready? Or you've got one ear to the ground? Is there a possibility you may need to go back?
Well, there's a personal security detail that's with the family at all times, and there's also still militia units rotating through and individuals from all over the country that are forming a multi-level security barrier. And hopefully they keep coming, because as the rhetoric has grown from the government and those within it, like Harry Reid calling us domestic terrorists.
Absolutely.
We know how the government deals with terrorists, and they don't negotiate. Well, I don't know. Maybe we're learning that they do negotiate, but at any rate.
You got to have something they want. I don't think you're harboring any Al-Qaeda terrorists in your possession for a trade.
No, if we were harboring Al-Qaeda terrorists, then the BLM probably would have come over and shake our hands, I guess.
Yeah, probably. So you guys are always on the – you've got one ear to the ground. You've got maybe other situations that you're watching very closely, that you don't have to deploy more militia in any other places across the country. But after this situation, it's obvious to everybody in America that citizens are very well networked, very capable of standing up and pushing back, and you're not going to sit down and take it.
Right, and this definitely changed things. I mean, I've heard some people say that this was the second shot heard around the world. There wasn't a shot fired, luckily. It had that importance. There are very few periods in American history where something like that has happened, and God forbid that it happens again. As far as situations that are brewing all over the country, I would implore people to look at the border. If anybody thinks that they can lend a hand with something or desires to lend a hand with something, then that's an area that needs attention. The BLM has been doing the same thing, grabbing up land all along the border, and Border Patrol doesn't patrol it. BLM doesn't do anything with it. So it's just a a super highway for drugs and illegal aliens to come into the country. So that is definitely something we're watching.
Okay, amazing work, Ryan Payne, Operation Mutual Aid. Thanks so much for coming on with me tonight and giving us an update. And I hope that you'll keep us updated if anything else arises. We want to keep on top of the situation. You've been a fabulous resource. We have had a couple of great conversations with the Bundy family on the air. We appreciate what's really going on the ground, behind the scenes, without the media spin, straight from the horse's mouth kind of thing, so that people can be truly informed and, not get the media spin that distorts the truth.
Right. Straight from the mouth of the horse is the best way. And there again, the Bundys are great for that. They're educated and they speak well, and they voice the cause in a great way. And hopefully we'll do them justice as being the first to really make that stand.
Absolutely. Operation Mutual Aid. Thank you, Ryan. We'll be talking to you again soon. I appreciate your time. Good luck.
Thanks a lot, Lisa.
Bye-bye. All right.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes, can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You've been listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We will be here next Wednesday night at 7 p.m. I want to thank Cindy McGee for joining me tonight and giving us that great information on those bills, the farm bill in Missouri, and talking about Common Core with me. Hope you'll all take those messages to heart and think differently about your legislators and what you need to do to take back your conservative movement. We will be here again as Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join Dave Court on Friday and Saturday evenings here, and Cynthia Davis on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. And until next week, we'll talk to you then.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.